It is June, and I want to give a shout out to all the wonderful people who go to patreon.com and support Seth Lustig Bruce. Let's give a wonderful thank you to Jeff Ulmer, Sylvia Nell, Liz Brunson, Fernando Santamaria Lozano, Steve Van Sack, Rob Barnett, Randy Brown, Crystal Carroll, Bella Pori, John Munson, Betsy Hodges, Levi Petrie, Stephen Malio, Captain America, Dale Hosack, Terry Smith, Anna Lynn, Chris Bloom, and Mary Thomas. Thank you so much for being here and providing support. Because of these wonderful people, Seth Lustig Bruce continues to happen. For now, on to the podcast.
I've been thinking about this, and I don't have like a lightning strike, lightning bolt moment like a lot of people do when they first heard Bruce and fell in love. I just kind of remember his music just always being there. So I was born in 66. So 75, when Born to Run came out, I do remember my boyfriend at the, well, a little bit later than that, late 70s. Yeah. Boyfriend at the time singing Born to Run to me, which is a good fallback for lots of fellas.
Yes.
And so I remember that, but I just have that sort of vague memory. When we moved to Florida in 81, though, from Pennsylvania, my two best friends, who are still very close pals, were way into Bruce. And so thanks to them, I listened all the time, and those were the two girls that we camped out outside of Peaches Records for the Born in the USA tour. And I've been to, I don't know, half a dozen shows with one or both of them over the years.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of Seth Lustig Bruce, your podcast all about Bruce Springsteen, his music, and mostly his fans. I am your host, Jesse Jackson. Joining me tonight is Wendy. We've already had a lovely conversation about some good stuff and some bad stuff. Today, as we're recording, is March 30th, and news came out of New York that makes this blueberry and a strawberry patch very happy. And Wendy said, can we just talk about that for a while? I said, no, we'd probably stick to Bruce, but welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks so much for inviting me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. So you got the Beach Boys, you got Bruce, you've got Peter Pan. Wendy is a cool name.
Thank you. Don't forget the association, right?
Yeah.
Although that's windy, but I got that a lot growing up. Everyone knows. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. So tell us about yourself.
I am a writer and editor. I live in Tampa, Florida. Lucky enough to be the site of the first show on the tour in February. I have a 23-year-old son who's a musician in Nashville. He just graduated from Belmont last year and is gigging and trying to make it happen. I used to be a journalist. I was a stringer for Time Magazine for a long time. I was a magazine editor, wrote for newspapers and lots of publications. And now I'm an editor for a research firm. We do forecasting and data analysis on business trends and issues.
So I run a contact center. Am I going to continue having problem hiring people?
I'll have to look into that for you, but I'll get back to you.
It is, I'm here in Dallas where there are dozens, if not hundreds, of contact centers, and my poor HR person, she calls and they go, "Is it remote?" And she goes, "Well, we need you to come in house and learn, and then after 3 months, if you're doing well, click, click." You know, so life after COVID is very different. So anyway, welcome. I'm so glad you're here. I bet you could spend an hour just talking about stories, doing stuff for time. I'm sure there's some cool stories from that.
Yeah, that was I was with the magazine back in, and again, I was a freelancer, I wasn't a staffer, but in the early 2000s, so right around the start of the Iraq War, I covered a terrorism trial that happened here in Tampa. Sammy Alarian, who was a USF, University of South Florida professor, who was arrested and charged with many counts of terrorism. He was eventually found, it was a very long trial. He was eventually found not guilty except for one count. It was an amazing experience covering that trial and getting to know the federal justice system a little bit during that time. And I did other fun stories, feature stories, like one about souped up lawnmowers. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think the beauty of writer being a freelancer is the wide variety of stories you get to you. It's hard to get bored, right? Because each thing you go to something very serious, like you said, to something silly. So that keeps your interest sparked, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. My favorite job when I was younger was I was the arts editor for Creative Loafing newspaper in Atlanta. It's a weekly alternative paper. It's still around. It's not, I don't think it's in print anymore. I think it's just online, but that was an amazing time to be in that business. Just the Olympics came to Atlanta. The music scene was really on fire. It was a fantastic, fantastic job. I was super lucky to work there
That
during that.
sounds fun. All right, so we always like to start at the beginning. So, where did you grow up? And what kind of music were your parents listening to when you were a child?
I was born in Richmond and we moved around a bit. Most of my childhood was in York, Pennsylvania, about halfway between Philly and Pittsburgh, sort of right in the middle of the state, very close to the Maryland border. And then we moved to Florida when I was 15 in the start of the 80s. So my parents were children of the 60s, very politically active. They went to the March on Washington. They were always involved in local politics and national issues. In fact, one of my first memories is of watching the Watergate trial on TV after the hearings after my swim practice when we lived in Savannah. So I grew up with that, that environment. Lots of politics, lots of 60s kind of stuff, and music was always on in our house. My parents listened to the Beatles, Simon and Garfunkel, the Grateful Dead. Santana was a big favorite of both of them. I remember we had one of those giant console stereo systems, that looks like a huge piece of furniture,
I
and it had a
do. We had the
light.
same.
Did you? Yeah, I think everybody
Yes.
did. You lift up the lid and the radio and the turntable and all the things. But it had lights built into the speakers that would flash and in time to the music. So every time I hear Santana now, I see in my memory those silly lights flashing. It just seemed so cool at the time. And they also listened to the Moody Blues and Pink Floyd. Not super easy for me to listen to those two anymore. That I get a little bit anxious. Those two were not during particularly happy times. I also had I had an aunt who was 10 years older and a cousin who was 5 years older. So I got a lot of my music education from them as well. Led Zeppelin, The Stones, Crosby, Stills, and Nash. So really just a pretty broad foundation in my musical history.
So one of the things that you made me think is I was, God, this is probably years ago, but I was at lunch with one of my best friends I worked with, and we've remained close friends, even though, he's still at the same company, but I've gone through two or three jobs since. And I don't remember what brought it to, but I remember I was telling him the story that the news was had people at the Astrodome talking about the night that Nixon was going to resign, that somebody says, well, the result of that speech is known. The result of this ball game isn't, so I've decided to go to the ball game. And my friend looks at us and goes, how old are you? And I'm like, what? I was born in 59. You were born during the Eisenhower administration? I'm like, yeah, I guess.
Person
So
still a friend of yours?
yeah, you say, I was
Okay.
all of a sudden I felt like, oh, am I Rip Van Winkle or what? So yes, I remember the Watergate trials. My parents weren't political at all. I can vaguely remember more of emotion of President Kennedy's funeral and the cartoons not being on, that was like, hey, what's the deal? So that's great. Did you embrace your parents' music? Did you rebel? Did you find your own music as you started getting to be a teenager and, hitting high school and college?
I think I embraced it.
Okay.
I never went through a real rebellious phase at all that I can, my mother might have a different answer to
Yeah, I'm
that,
they all do, yes.
but I think I was a pretty good kid.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, my parent, as far as music, I was aligned with my parents' taste pretty much from the start. And, they had good taste. So
Yeah, no, that's great music, yeah.
They were not into Bruce. I don't recall ever hearing Springsteen in the house, as much as we heard everybody else.
So, if you can, do you remember when you first became aware of Bruce? And if you can articulate it, what about him spoke to you?
I've been thinking about this, and I don't have like a lightning strike, lightning bolt moment like a lot of people do when they first heard Bruce
Yeah.
and fell in love. I just kind of remember his music just always being there. So I was born in 66, so 75 when Born to Run came out. I do remember my boyfriend at the, well, a little bit later than that, late 70s. Boyfriend at the time singing Born to Run to me, which is a good fallback for lots of fellas.
Yes.
And so I remember that, but I just have that sort of vague memory. When we moved to Florida in 81, though, from Pennsylvania, my two best friends, who are still very close pals, were way into Bruce. And so thanks to them, I listened all the time, and those were the two girls that we camped out outside of Peaches Records for the Born in the USA tour. And I've been to, I don't know, half a dozen shows with one or both of them over the years.
Was that Born in the USA your first show?
Yep, it was December 84, and it was in Tallahassee. And he played Santa Claus,
Okay.
and we had a blast. We stayed in some, crappy little dive hotel because we were all broke. I don't even know if we could afford beer at the time, but we somehow made it up to Tallahassee. It's about a 4-hour drive. And in fact, one of those girls, Laura, was supposed to go with me to Greensboro last weekend for the show, and had to cancel at the last minute. So we're still, trying to see
That's
shows together.
awesome. I love that. So I always like to preface this, Wendy, with the amount of times you've seen Bruce perform live is not a fair barometer of how big of a fan you are. I think it has a lot to do with your age, your economic situation, where you live. If you lived in the East Coast growing up in the 70s, there's a chance you saw Bruce a lot versus like someone else growing up in Louisiana and then moving to Texas. It's not as often. But do you count the noun of shows, and if so, how many?
I tried to make a list the other day, and
Okay.
I came up with close to 20,
Okay.
but I'm constantly like remembering, I need to find a website or something and look and see all the tours and try to match them up that way. But yeah, I think I'm close to 20, which, like you said, makes me a newbie
Yeah,
compared to
to
a
a lot
lot
of
of
people.
people.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So I am putting in the chat. It is My Boss Time is the name of the website. He's actually been on the podcast. It is a free, you set up an account, and he has every tour listed. And so you go and you go to, the Born in the USA tour and that, and you click it, and then and it behind the scenes calculates, and then you get the fun nerdy things like I've done 19 shows and it tells me these are your rarest songs. Like
Oh,
he's only
wow.
played The Wall 8 times, you were able to see that once. And then it tells you what songs you've heard the most. And to me, I've heard The Rising on every show I've gone to. And then so and it gives you that, and then to get really geeky, it shows you all the albums and then what percentage of the albums you've heard live. Oh, it's be careful you have time, but it is a rabbit hole that is so much fun.
I love that. That sounds
Yes.
great.
Yeah, so I have to check
Totally.
that. Good.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
All right, so I'm going to ask you some more questions, but I have to talk about that night in Atlanta. But before that, listeners, hang tight. We got to take a break. We'll be back in just a minute or two to hear about a special backstage visit. We will be back in just a moment.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shouted Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus meal plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
Okay, and we're back. So pulling back the curtain, when I invite my guests, you know, I send a link to where they book and I give it, please share a little about yourself. Some people leave nothing. Other people, one sentence, but the people I love give me like, oh, let me give you a little bit ideas of things to talk about. So you said one night in Atlanta, you did make it backstage. I have to hear this story. Go for it.
Oh, yeah. It's a treasured memory, but also a sheepish memory. It was on the Rising Tour, and I was living in Tampa. My son was 3. So I loaded him up in the car. We drove to Atlanta, and a friend of mine worked at Southern Trucks, the studio where they recorded The Rising, and I think a couple of records after that too. So my friend Jeff had become close with Bruce and sort of his Atlanta ambassador and showed him around and so forth. So Jeff got me a backstage pass, and it was amazing. I got to have dinner backstage with the band. I met Terry. It's a lot of it is a blur, because I was just so overwhelmed with and just the reality that I was like right here and Bruce is like a few feet that way. And Clarence was on a treadmill in the hallway. And this was after dinner, a little bit close to the showtime. And he was on a treadmill walking and he was wearing a kilt. And Jeff introduced me to him and he gave me a big smile and he just looked like he was, you know, having the time of his life, gave me a big wave. I got to go, Stevie and Jeff and I, and a couple other people walked outside. I don't recall exactly how that happened, but we were outside. There were a couple news helicopters hovering and Stevie said something about, you know, hoping there wasn't some kind of terrorist threat or something. And he didn't realize that the band being there was big news. So it was just so much fun. The sheepish part is that I got to meet Bruce. My friend Jeff and I were in that hallway a little bit closer to the showtime, and there was a pretty big crowd around Bruce. People were shaking hands and chatting and taking pictures, and they all dispersed. And then it was just Bruce and Jeff and me. And Jeff introduced me. This is my friend Wendy. We shook hands, and he kind of, you know, gave me a little once over, and I froze. I just could not come up with anything to say. And I just squeaked out, "Hi," and then just stood there. And he kind of looked at me like he was waiting for me to say something. And when it was clear that nothing was happening, he just turned to Jeff and they started talking and carried on their conversation with me just standing there like trembling like a 12-year-old. But I, you know, to this day, I still don't know what I would have said. I've thought about that, like what would have been appropriate, what would have, you know, endeared me to him forever. And, you know, what do you say to Bruce Springsteen when you're a fan, other than just thank you? You know, I it was lovely to get to meet him and have that moment, even though it's one of the most embarrassing memories of my life.
Did you get a photo?
No. This was, you know, I didn't have a cell phone, yeah. I don't think, in 2003. Mm-hmm. And if I did, I probably, you know, sure. Forgotten all about it or something. But yeah, that's another, I wish we had had a little camera to take a picture. That would have been great too. And I had an 8-hour drive from Tampa, and I should have taken some of that time to figure out something just in mm-hmm. case I was able to meet him, but I didn't. Yeah.
Well, but you got a nice moment with Clarence and with Stevie. Yeah. And so yeah. that's kind of nice. Yeah, that's very cool. Yeah.
No regrets about that. It was amazing. And I was able to be in the pit for the show, which was, you know, phenomenal. So
yeah. So I want to get to the latest shows, but any other stories from the past that, where you had some adventures you want to share?
There was the show, a very meaningful, moving experience was the first show after Danny died.
Yeah.
The show was in Tampa, and just the it was just so moving. They came out, they did back streets and showed some, photos and video, and it just the you could have heard in the audience, you could have heard a pin drop. People were just completely still and silent and enraptured with the music, and Bruce was just wailing, it was just a beautiful experience, so moving. And I'm kind of feeling that in this tour, in a way, that sort of poignancy. Backstreets is, it feels like a whole new song in a way. Just the power of it, we're all getting older. It's, that is sort of the theme of this tour, aging and losing people and sort of too many goodbyes and not enough hellos and all of that. And I felt that really intensely in Greensboro last weekend during Backstreets. I was crying and I was trying to like not let anybody see. I was right in front of the stage and I didn't want to, but I'm sure I wasn't the only one. Because it was just a really powerful experience.
So you did Tampa opening night and then Greensboro. So you've gone two on the tour.
We also went to Atlanta. So Tampa, then Atlanta, and then Greensboro.
So how is your feeling about the set list not changing much?
Oh, I couldn't care less, really. I mean, every show is that night's experience. Like I don't, it doesn't matter to me, really. I mean, okay, let me just soften that a little bit. If he stopped playing Born to Run, I would probably not be very happy. And a couple other Backstreets I wouldn't want to miss. It's always a thrill. Like last night I was watching the live stream from Detroit, and when Darkness started, you get the goosebumps and the stomach flip and all of that. But as far as being there live and getting annoyed that the set list hasn't changed, that's just not an issue for me.
I love that, Wendy. I had a guest on probably about a year and a half ago, and she just a sweet person, but she mentioned, and this is a phrase you've heard, I've experienced that. I don't need to hear Born to Run again. I've heard it X amount of times. And I said, I get that. I said, but just for a moment, I want you to think. You're going to your first Bruce Springsteen show. And if he doesn't play Born to Run, how disappointed are you?
Right.
And she said, you're right. I will never think that again. And in fact, Mark Dempsey and I were talking. He's from the UK. We've gotten to be friends. And he said that I watch Bruce the whole show. I stare at Bruce, or I stare at, Max, or, I look at the band. When Born to Run comes on, I turn around, my back to the stage, and I watch the audience because the joy of people that are seeing that. And yeah, I think that's well said. It is, and I had someone on the podcast earlier, and she was saying, and I loved her way. She goes, obviously, there are songs that I've heard enough live that I'm okay if I don't hear them again. But I know those songs are different than what other person might say, well, I've heard this song enough, right? It's we all have different feelings. So do it. I sent you in the chat, Craig Colby. Is a Canadian TV producer. And he wrote up what he thought the set list meant to him. He the meanings behind every song. Because, Stephen has said, we're telling a story. This is what this is about. And I thought he really nailed it pretty well. That And I feel like he's telling a story. I was able to go to three shows, and I loved every minute of it. I didn't. Now, I got lucky in Houston, and in Austin, he did If I Was the Priest, and that was great. But mm-hmm. you guys got Burning Train, and I really would have loved Burning Train. So, you know, it's just so good to have them back in our lives.
Yes.
The idea to see them live again, and that, as I talked about, I'm 63. I'll be 64 in June. I understand that the road in front of me is shorter than the road behind me. Mm-hmm. And I know that band feels the same way. I felt like it during the River Tour, that there was a sense of joy and happiness that we don't know how much longer we're going to do this. David Bowie had died. Prince had died. Mm-hmm. Glenn Frey, all these others. And now then, since then, you think of John Prine and mm-hmm. all these other, you know, we're blessed. We've gotten to do this, and we're going to love it every moment.
Yes. Yes. I totally feel that. And I admit, I do get a little bit touchy when people are complaining about the set list. Like, 'cause like you said, there are people in the audience who this could be their first show, you know, this yes. could be their first tour. And just because you are able to go to 16 shows and one tour, you know, that's a little bit selfish. And, yeah. But at the same time, you know, like you said, the joy, Bruce seems, so in the Greensboro show last weekend, I was up against the stage, and it was a completely different experience than I've ever had before. Getting to see the expressions on their faces and really feel the emotion. It was just such an amazing, amazing night. But he seems like he's getting younger. He has more energy. He just seems different now than he did even at the start of the tour in Tampa and Atlanta. And granted, I wasn't like up close for those two. Well, I was kind of close in Tampa, but
yeah,
not up against the stage where like he was sweating on me. But he is just getting so energized by this tour, and he looks like he's having the time of his life. The joy on his face, you know, is equal to the joy that he's giving to all of us.
Yeah, I'm swearing there's a photo, there's a painting of him in an attic somewhere, right? And it's like that's, yes, exactly. Yeah. It is amazing to see them, and they do look like they're having fun. Mm-hmm. I remember hearing an interview with Carl Wilson of the Beach Boys once, and he said that he, and I don't remember which song, I want to say Help Me Rhonda, but he doesn't do lead on Help Me Rhonda, but it was a song, he says, I'm just tired of doing this song. I've done it thousands of thousands of time, and I'm on stage, and I'm just like, do I really have to sing this song again? And he says, and all of a sudden I was feeling that way, and I looked at the audience lighting up because we were doing this song, and I felt a revival of why I love this song.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when the great Linda Ronstadt was on Johnny Carson, which is, you know, for my younger audience, they're going, who? But she talked about, she was talking to Johnny, and he said, I understand you went and saw Frank Sinatra. She goes, yes. And she goes, it was amazing. And she goes, and it gave me insight. I wanted to hear him do a whole selection of songs. And she goes, and I started thinking about, like, I'm going, do I really need to do Blue Bayou again? Do I really need to do Poor, Poor, Pitiful Me? And I realized my audience is me wanting to see Frank Sinatra. So, of course, I've got to do those songs.
Right.
And I just think that's great. And I get frustrated too. I get very frustrated that the idea, Like, hey, he always changes the set list, and I bought three tickets for the shows, and now that I'm getting the same show, well, you know, get over it. And
it's not the same show.
No.
It's absolutely not. Every night is different with, yeah, with this guy and the band. Yeah.
And so what I answered, I said, I've seen three shows. I was not bored in one of them. I saw four shows on the River Tour. I was not bored at one of them. I have seen Casablanca a million times. I'm never bored when I watch Casablanca. I've watched Shawshank Redemption tons of times. I'm never bored when I do that. When I hear Pet Sounds, I'm never bored hearing that album. Right? Like, this, look at you and not this, right? Because how many times do we rewatch a movie or do something and it gives us the same joy?
Yes. Exactly.
Absolutely.
I love that.
Do you have plans to do other shows this tour?
I hope so. I don't
okay.
currently have any tickets, but hoping the stars align for
me
later
too.
In the year, for sure. Yeah.
So a friend of mine on Twitter said, do you know of anyone who needs a ticket for Cleveland, or do you want it? And I was like, that's April 5th, Wednesday. No, I was like, I looked up flights, you know, I tried to like, okay, it's an 18-hour drive from Dallas. Can I miss work? And I ended up going, no, I just can't.
It's so tempting though, right?
It was tempting. It was so tempting. And another buddy of mine reached out and said, hey, are you coming to see Bruce in San Diego? Because we haven't seen each other forever. Like, no, but I'm tempted, right?
I think it's to go. Both of them. Go to Cleveland. Go
exactly.
To
I've told this story multiple times on the podcast, but I think it's worth telling, is I've struggled with weight my whole life. And I was at a Weight Watchers meeting and the leader told me something, or told the group that something that has stuck with me. She said, you're on the program and you want a piece of chocolate cake. And what you do is you eat the cake and then you feel like crap the rest of the day because you ate the cake. Or you don't eat the cake and then you're mad at yourself and you're angry that you've been deprived of that cake. She goes, why don't you change it? If you want the cake, eat it, enjoy it, relish the taste of that cake, and get back on the program. Or don't eat the cake and be proud. Be happy that you stick to the program and congratulate yourself that you didn't eat the cake. And I said, I feel that way about tickets. What happens is you buy the tickets because you worry they're going to sell out, and then you're mad that you overpaid, right? Because there's now tickets available for $50.
Yeah.
So there's two things. You can buy the tickets when they go on sale, and that way you know you have the tickets. Mm-hmm. That way I've got whatever I had to pay, I have the tickets. I now can make airline plans, I can get hotels, or I'm not going to buy tickets and I'm going to wait and see. And then if I end up getting to go to the show, great. If I don't, it's okay. And I think what happens is I've seen so many people get upset about, oh my God, I can't believe I paid $300 a seat. And now then I could have got them for $50, you know? Well, but you got the tickets,
right?
Yeah. So that's not a question. I was just sharing. So please, any thoughts you want to give me?
Yeah, that's interesting. I love the analogy of Bruce as chocolate cake.
Yes, exactly.
I wasn't planning to go to Greensboro, and it kind of fits your story a little bit. It was, the show was on the 25th. My birthday was the 26th. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was like a week before the show, I just decided I'm going to do this. I'm going to go. And one of my girlfriends was I convinced her to come meet me in Greensboro. She lives in Charlottesville. At the end, she wasn't allowed to make it, or wasn't able to make it. See, I'm thinking we're back in high school.
Yeah. Her mom and dad said, no, it's a school night. You can't go.
Exactly. She wasn't able to make it at the last minute, but she had not bought a ticket. And we had spoken during that week about, you know, she's not as rabid as I am over the past couple of decades. So I was aware of the drop tickets at the end of the, you know, right before the show and all of that. And she was really anxious about waiting that long. And anyway, she ended up not coming, and she's very much a planner. So she was super uncomfortable with the, you know, the notion of waiting until she actually got to Greensboro to find a ticket online. So,
I love that. Do you have favorite songs or albums that you go to on a regular basis that feed your soul?
All of them, really.
Okay, that's good.
I listen to Darkness probably more than all the others, or I have over the years, I would say. I've never really thought about that, like which I don't, that question is so hard. Everybody says it's like picking your favorite kid.
Yes.
I probably have listened to Darkness more than all the others, but I love Western Stars. That's been in heavy rotation for the past year. It's just so beautiful. And Letter to You. I would say those are the top three in the past, in my history of Bruce love.
So I just was invited to join a podcast network, and I've been independent for the past 3 or 4 years, and I'm excited. And one of the new hosts was saying, hey, I want to do an episode about artists who, after what you would think of their creative high, come up with something amazing. And he mentioned like David Bowie's last album. And I said, well, I'm biased, but I would argue that Western Stars and Letter to You are really strong. Absolutely. For someone who's been doing this long. I love the covers album. It's fun. It you know, this is just, he wanted to do it and he did it. And so when you throw it in the car and you've got the window down, it's a fun listen to. But I think that's all it was, just for fun. But I think Western Stars and Letter to You, and A Letter to You especially, is just, he, at this age, he still has something to say to us. And I think that's pretty amazing.
Yes, absolutely. I totally agree. They're both so powerful in very different ways, I think. And I think that I've watched, you know, talk about watching movies 100 times. I think I've worn them both out watching them online. They're just both amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
The covers, like you said about the covers record, that was a lot of fun. But I have to say, seeing Bruce and Curtis like up front, within inches of me doing night shift, was just, you know, magnificent.
I mean there are two or three songs, in fact, what I thought they were going to do, and of course Bruce is not calling me up asking, I thought that he would pick three or four of those songs, and instead of doing Shout, he'd rotate that is kind of the closing song, right? Like one of these. But you know, instead, you know, he knows what he's doing. But yes, I love these, and I wouldn't mind hearing two or three. I think, you know, I Wish It Would Rain is, it sounds like a Bruce song. So yes, I love to hear them. That's great.
Yeah. Congratulations, by the way, on the network.
Yes, it's pretty cool. It was nice to be wanted. I was like, they reached out and said, make a note to edit this out. But they said, we don't have a Bruce. It's Pantheon, and they do nothing but music podcasts. That's all they do. And they reached out and said, we don't have a Springsteen podcast. would you be interested in joining us? And I go, yeah.
Wow, that's
Yeah.
fantastic.
Yeah, it is. It's really fun. So you, I think I know the answer to this, but I want to ask, is there songs you're chasing? Is there a song that you haven't got to hear live that you're still wanting?
I don't think so. No, I've never gone into a show, with that kind of
Yeah.
wish. It's always just whatever happens during that night. I'm generally pretty happy with it.
I love that mindset of yours that you're going in eager for what the universe is going to give you. Just whatever you're going to give me what I need at this given moment, and I
Yeah.
have faith in the Bruce universe to deliver. I absolutely adore that. I think that is so well done.
That's a lovely way to put it, whatever you need on that given night. And that has been true over the past 40 years of going to shows. That's absolutely been true.
One of the other shows I do is I do a Songs of Your Life, and what I give you 11 questions, like what song do you hate? What song do you think is overrated? What song made you fall in love with Bruce? What song do you never get tired of hearing? And one of my guests who did this said, the song I hate, the last song of the set.
Oh, yes.
I said, okay, that is the perfect answer. Yes, exactly. Yeah, that is good. All right, I made you laugh. And listeners, we're going to take a detour for just a few minutes. So if you do not want to get serious, I totally respect you, and I move it, so jump ahead for a few minutes. But you are a volunteer leader for a pretty important organization. So tell me a little bit about this.
Oh, thanks. So yes, I'm a volunteer with Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. I'm the co-leader for the Florida chapter. We advocate for stronger gun laws at the state level, the national level, even at the local level, and we work on measures that like secure storage, gun locks, things like that, and awareness campaigns in our schools and at the local level to try to keep guns out of the wrong hands and try to keep our kids and communities safe.
How did you get involved with this program?
I got involved because there was an incident at my son's school when he was in high school. I think he was in ninth grade, 10th grade. I went to pick him up. As I pulled up in the car line, there were cops everywhere. The campus was just crawling with police officers. There was a helicopter. And I jumped out of the car because that's what a mom does, right? And I was running toward the school. I got practically tackled by a couple of big police officers and told to get back in my car. And Jacob, my son, he quickly texted me, during that same moment and told me what was going on. He didn't know at that time there was they just moved the kids back inside and had them on lockdown for about 45 minutes because, as it turned out, there was a stolen car in the neighborhood that had a gun in the car. So it was, the quote, an abundance of caution, et cetera, et cetera. I had already been aware of Moms Demand Action at that point. But when I got home that day, I got online and emailed somebody, I don't remember exactly who it was, and said, sign me up. I need to do more here. And so I ended up, at that time, we didn't have a local group in Tampa. So I started the local group here. We used to have, our meetings in my living room around the coffee table with, four or five people. And I've been involved since then, and now co-lead the Florida chapter. It's an amazing organization. The people that I've met through this work are devoted, committed. We don't get paid, and it's really frustrating sometimes, especially when you have a week like this one, when we woke up Monday morning to the Nashville school shooting. the tragedy there, you know, it's been such a crazy week. Just the sort of whiplash of from going from that to seeing the demonstration today, thousands of people showing up the Nashville at the Tennessee State Capitol in Nashville and demanding that Governor Lee and the Republican-controlled legislature do something to stop this. There was another shooting in Memphis last night. I believe seven people were shot and two of them are dead. You know, Miami Beach just 2 weeks ago, over a spring break weekend, two people were killed. And I watched that hearing, the Miami Beach Council, where they were trying to address this issue and figure out what to do about it. And they decided they were going to institute a curfew. And I'm sitting here at home watching, and I just was enraged at this idea that we have to, that we're, what was the quote that you said earlier? The Simpsons
So
quote.
one of my favorite Simpsons quotes is, we've tried nothing and we're all out of options.
Exactly. And that's how I see a curfew. You
Yeah.
know, gun violence does not take place at a particular time of day.
Right.
There need to be stronger gun laws. And then today, the Florida legislature, actually the Senate today, passed permitless carry, which means that anybody in the state of Florida can get a firearm, can carry a concealed firearm without having obtained a permit or any kind of safety training. So they have effectively obliterated the most important safety measures that we have on firearms in this state. I listened to the House debate last Friday on my way to Greensboro. So that was a particularly poignant sort of trip for me, watching or listening online on the radio as these legislators who are completely beholden to the gun lobby and the manufacturers' money that lines their pockets, talk about, you know, the only criminals don't believe in laws, and it's just absurd. Some of their arguments are worse than doing nothing. So yeah, it's been a difficult week. DeSantis, our Governor DeSantis, is going to sign this bill, and you know, like in other states where they've signed permitless carry, Texas is one of
Yes,
them.
exactly. I
Tennessee
mean,
is
Uvalde
another.
shooting. I mean, where, and you find out afterwards that the police did nothing. I mean, just it is so sad that I walked in, to the bedroom. My wife was watching TV and she's like, another shooting. And I'm like, oh, I know. And it just and I actually emailed you and I said, hey, Wendy, I see what you do. I think this is an important topic, but I don't want to muddy the waters if you just want to talk about Bruce. And you were kindly enough to say, no, this is important and I'm glad to share. I get so frustrated because we aren't doing anything. We won't even have the discussion. And I know you can't answer this, but I'm curious. Mothers Against Drunk Driving made a huge difference. I mean, there was a time when if you were caught drinking, the police would have said, okay, scoot over, follow me, let me get them home. Or hey, kids, you should be careful. And it has become socially unacceptable to drink and drive. I mean, it is everywhere. And it just goes to show how strong of a lobby this is and how people are wrapped up into this belief that it feels like we can't even move an inch. What are your thoughts on that?
I totally hear you. It feels as though nothing is happening. And in a lot of states like Florida, like Texas, like Tennessee, we're actually going backwards.
Yes.
But we have made a lot of progress. at the state level, not big sweeping federal legislation on universal background checks and reinstating the assault weapons ban. Those are the big things that we are fighting like hell to get passed at the federal level. But at the state level, we have made a tremendous amount of progress in the past 10 years since Shannon Watts started this organization. And in fact, she modeled it after Mothers Against Drunk Driving. She went on Facebook the day after the Sandy Hook shooting and said, "Where is the Mothers Against Drunk Driving for gun violence?"
Yeah.
And that's how Moms Demand Action came to be. So at the state level, we are making progress disarming domestic abusers, making sure that secure storage laws are in place in a lot of states, getting background checks, raising the age to purchase a weapon from 18 to 21. In Florida, we passed a wonderful slate of gun violence prevention measures in 2018, right after the Parkland murders. And now DeSantis and the supermajority of Republicans in the Florida legislature are obliterating that progress. We raised the age of purchase from 18 to 21. They're trying to knock it back down. We instituted red flag laws, which means that law enforcement can temporarily, with a judge's approval, remove a firearm from an individual who is deemed to be a danger to himself or others. There were measures to, you know, toughen up security in schools, et cetera, et cetera. And now the legislature is just decimating all of that progress. And we're going to go back to the level of gun violence in the states where permitless carry is now a law, like Texas and Tennessee, the gun violence rates, the homicide by gun rates have gone up by 11 to 15% since permitless carry was made law.
The things you're suggesting and talking about, none of them are about you're going to take away my gun.
Right.
You're exactly. Going to destroy my rights. Mm-hmm. And let's, you can get in a whole debate about the Second Amendment. And I don't want to touch that hot potato. All I want to know is that we had this, I'm not trying to make this trite, but we had after 9/11 scares, and you can't carry my 3-inch pen knife into a plane anymore.
Yep. Exactly.
I can't do that. For the longest time, because of the scare, you couldn't get equal on a plane because it looked too bad. We make changes for drastic things that are small things, yet this where we are losing people and losing children. All gun violence is horrible, and mass shootings at nightclubs and malls and everything are horrible. But you would think that schools would go, "Oh, wait, wait a minute." But no, this is so good. And I hope that people that are easily offended did skip this, but I am always, Wendy, hypocrisy kills me all the time. It is, if people say, what is the one thing you could change? I said, I think if I could get rid of hypocrisy, I would be a happier person in, you know, with politics. But let me get this straight. To stop abortions, we're going to have a law that outlaws abortions. Mm-hmm. But it is not reasonable to have a law against guns to stop gun violence. Right. It and the same people believe both things.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife will not watch the latest Handmaid season. Mm-hmm. She says it's just too painful because it's just too real nowadays. Yeah. Got serious for a minute, but yes, no, okay. I don't, and I think part of it is the people that do want some changes, we feel powerless. And I think your organization is a good example of, no, we're not powerless. We just need to keep working on it.
Right. We are not powerless. If I could just, if I could shout that from the rooftops, we are not powerless. We are making progress. Get loud, go, you know, join Moms Demand Action. It's not just moms. We call ourselves mothers and others. We take all comers. We have more supporters now than the NRA has. So, you know, gun violence prevention is not a partisan issue among the population. Normal people, 85% of people in the U.S., all people, Republicans, Democrats, gun owners, non-gun owners, believe that safety measures are important when you're talking about buying and carrying a firearm. But going back to what you said about hypocrisy, people like Ron DeSantis, who's our governor in Florida, is running for president, doesn't care about his constituents. All he cares about literally is getting elected president, his own personal ambitions. Today, while the Florida State Senate was voting to remove the permitting requirements here in Florida, DeSantis was in a gun shop outside of Atlanta campaigning. That's just enraging, you know? And 4 days after, three little babies and three staffers were killed at a school in Nashville. It's shocking to me, frankly. It's just beyond belief that this governor is banning books and wants to ban certain artwork and is taking over universities. And like you said, is, you know, crowing about the free state of Florida. Yeah, the hypocrisy is just blinding.
Yeah, I had another guest from Florida and we had a lovely talk. And then after I hit record, I went, so I didn't want to get into it. He goes, oh, no, I'm from South Florida. I'm not middle and upper Florida crazy. No, I think DeSantis is an idiot. Well, you know, in Texas, you know, I routinely email and call Ted Cruz and John Cornyn, and I am furious at their response is, thank you for reaching out to me. Let me explain why your opinion is wrong. Mm-hmm. Please let me know if there's anything else I could do for you.
Right.
It just,
yeah.
Period. And yeah, you know, and it's just, so anyway, so thank you. Go ahead.
If I could just, you know, like I said, we are making progress, even yes. In the free state of Florida, we're making progress with Moms Demand Action. We have, yeah. We work with school boards, and these efforts are taking place over years, you know, several years of building relationships and building trust with superintendents and school boards and parents. And I believe we're up to 6 school districts in the state, including Hillsborough County here where I live and where my son went to public school. We have helped school boards pass resolutions to commit to secure storage information being sent home to parents. So that's our Be Smart program. So that encourages parents and caregivers to make sure that their guns are locked up, the ammunition is stored elsewhere, they're modeling good behavior about firearms around their kids. And we have helped get that information out to literally millions of parents around the state. So we're very proud of that work. And also, we haven't given up on this legislature. We just, at the beginning of March, we had our advocacy day. We had about, I believe we had 250, maybe 300 volunteers that convened in Tallahassee. And we met with 70 legislators and talked to them about permitless carry. We, you know, at some point, someday, we will have people in office again who believe in gun safety and who value the lives of children in the state over dollars from the gun manufacturers.
I'm
so hopeful.
That is very helpful. Mothersdemandaction.org. I am going to go. I'm going to sign up. I am going to explore more. And
Thank
I,
you. I'll
you
send you a
know,
t-shirt.
yeah, it is. And I think that's hold tight to your anger. Don't fall to your fears.
Yes. Yeah,
Right? To bring
absolutely.
it back to Bruce,
Yeah.
you know, it is bring on that wrecking ball. And it is good people. Faith will be rewarded. We've got to keep working on this. So thank you for sharing your wonderful story and that passion.
Thank you. I appreciate
Okay. Guys can come back. We're back on Bruce.
it. I hope nobody left. That was
Oh,
that's an
yes.
important
I hope not too.
conversation.
And I appreciate that. We've got to figure out how we can go to a show together, right? So this would be so much fun. I appreciate it. Next time, because I've already kept you over an hour, I'm so sorry. Next time I want to hear all about Jacob's music, and because you seem to be very proud of him, rightly so. He is a young singer-songwriter in Nashville trying to make that happen. I'd love to have you and him both on and talk about how you influenced his music and stuff. That would be a blast.
Oh my
So
goodness. Okay.
We'll have to make that happen. All right. Before I let you go, though, I end every episode with the Mary question. If you are a friend of Wendy's, or maybe you are a feller MDA and you're listening to this as she makes you proud, Jay Armstrong is a writer, a retired high school English teacher. But when he was teaching, he would take the song Thunder Road, give the lyrics to his students, and they would debate it and talk about it as if it was a poem. He would talk about the imagery. He would talk about the themes. He would compare this to Robert Frost poems. And at the end of the 2 days, he asked his class the question, "Does Mary get in the car?" So, Wendy, I'm in. Tell me, does Mary get in the car at the end of Thunder Road?
Mary gets in the car. Absolutely. Absolutely. If she doesn't, my entire like philosophy of life and love and passion is out the window. No pun intended, but yes, she gets in the car. Mary gets in the car.
I love that. That's great. If someone wants to reach you, what's the best way?
I'm on Twitter, Wendy
Okay.
Malloy.
Okay. Okay. Good.
We'll see you out there.
All right. Wendy, this was so nice. Thank you for staying up late. You're on East Coast time and you stayed up late for me. I had so much fun. Thank you. This was a joy visiting with you. So I any final thoughts?
Thank you. I've appreciated it too. Likewise, it's been great talking to you.
Well,
And
sounds
I'd
good.
love to get my kid on here with you too. That would be a blast.
That sounds fun. All right, listeners, go check out Moms Demand Action. Thank
Yeah.
you. Follow Wendy on Twitter and let's look for each other on an upcoming show. For now, be kind, be safe. We'll talk to you soon. Goodbye. There we go. Another episode. I'm about to go through a couple of things where you can reach me and give me feedback. So if you want to skip this, I understand, but I do hope you check it out every once in a while. I'm available on Twitter at Jesse Jackson DFW. The show is available at Setlusting Bruce. You can send me an email, setlustingbruce@gmail.com. You can send me a voicemail at 469-249-2442. I am currently doing a few other podcasts. Perfectly Good Podcast, John Hiatt from A to Z, where Sylvan Groth and I discuss every John Hiatt song in alphabetical order. My Babylon 5 podcast is Last Best Hope for Conversation, where Lou Karen and I discuss every episode of Babylon 5 in chronological order. I still am doing Next Stop Everywhere, the Doctor Who podcast with my brother in time, Charles Skaggs. And then finally, How Many Podcasts, the only podcast on the internet that counts, where my buddies and I discuss pop culture. You can go to our Patreon page and support the podcast for as little as $1 a month. You can go to our Facebook page, like, and please, please go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcast and leave a 5-star rating and review for all of the podcasts that I'm doing. It's okay if you don't listen to them, but if you subscribe and rate, it really will make my day better. Thank you, and I will talk to you soon.
You just heard the fun-talking, hard-rocking, music-loving, album-ranking, fan-thinking, joy-spreading, lyric-reading, story-sharing podcast that is the one, the only, Set Listing Bruce. The theme for Set Listing Bruce was written by David Rosen, used by permission.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.